Welcome to the Celtic Myth Pod Show, bringing the tales and stories of the ancient Celts to your fireside.
Episode 40, Betrayal in the Nursery. Hello, welcome to the Celtic Myth Pod Show. I'm Gary.
And I'm Ruth.
Do you know, it's great to be back. It's actually been a little while since we've made a show.
Yes, we've had a very busy time, haven't we? Life has really got in the way. Anyway, it's good to be back in the driving seat again, isn't it?
It is. Let's crack on.
Okay. In this show, the story of Puich, the Prince of Dyved, continues and events are beginning to take a nasty turn. Listen on. But before the story, the contact details. How can you get in touch with us?
Firstly, we're proud to tell you that we now have a phone number you can call us on. Give us a bell on 001-206-666-3775.
That's 001, United States number, 206-666-3775.
You can also leave us a message from your computer by using the SpeakPipe widget on our website at CelticMythPodShow.com or send us an email to Gary and Ruth at CelticMythPodShow.com. Or you can chat with us on Facebook or Twitter.
You'll find all the details, as usual, in the show notes for episode 40, which you'll find on our website at shownotes.celticmythpodshow.com.
Those show notes will list all the sources that we've used in retelling the original tale, as well as including a map of pre-Roman Wales and a list of all the Welsh names that you'll hear in this episode. Well worth a look.
Superb stuff. Now then, have we got any news and views?
Well, we've got a new phone number now, you know.
206-666-3775.
Yes, we mentioned that, I think.
We didn't say that you'll be able to call us directly from within our app now, as well as make a regular call, and that for anyone in the Seattle area, it's a local call.
That's pretty good, then.
I thought so.
Now, are you ready for some amazing news?
Certainly am. What's that?
Well, we've all been waiting for the brand new album called Sabbat from our friend Dave the Bard, and it's being released today. This very day.
What? You mean while we're recording this?
No. I mean the album's going to be launched on the same day that we're releasing the show.
Oh, that's superb. So, can we celebrate that in some way?
Well, I thought it would be a nice idea if we started the show with a track from the album and then let Dave sing us out at the end. What do you think?
Oh, yeah. Sounds good to me.
So let's have a listen to Dave's version of a very old English folk song, a song that I can almost guarantee everyone listening will know. So have a listen to Dave the Bard with his version of the song Scarborough Fair from his brand new album out today, Sabbat.
Parsley, sage, rosemary, and thyme. Remember me to one who lives there. She once was a true love of mine. Tell her to make me a cambric shirt, parsley, sage, rosemary, and thyme. Without no seams cost no needle work. Then she'll be a true love of mine. Tell her to find me an acre of land, parsley, sage, rosemary and thyme. Between the salt water and the sea strand, love of mine. Tell her to plough it with a lamb's horn, parsley, sage, rosemary, thyme, and sow it all o'er one peppercorn. Then she'll be a true love of mine. Tell her to reap it with a sickle of leather, parsley, sage, rosemary and thyme, and thrash it all out with a bunch of heather. Then she'll be a true love of mine. Are you going Scarborough Fair? Parsley, sage, rosemary and thyme. Remember me to one who lives there. She once was a true lover.
And that was the lovely Dave the Bard with Scarborough Fair from his latest superb album, Sabbat.
Okay, so are you ready for the story?
I definitely am. Tell us what happened in the last episode.
Here we go. In our last episode, Pwyll and Rhiannon return to Dyfed. They are greeted with joy and celebration, and all of the people of Wales are pleased to see them and throw them a tremendous feast. However, when the old druid, Pendaran, steps up to greet Rhiannon and give her his blessing, he goes into a trance and utters a mysterious prophecy, one that leaves her in tears. Time began to creep by. The green began to creep back into the fields, and hope, faith and joy began to settle back into the hearts of the people of Dyfed. Pwyll and Rhiannon travel to each of the cantrevs in Dyfed and perform their duties with fairness and with generosity. The next glorious solstice rolled round, and the next after that. It was only as 3 years were about to pass them by, and the rivers were growing no larger, the fields bearing no more grain, that the people of Dyfed began to question the fitness of their much-loved lord. Their land was still without an heir.
Some of the nobles began muttering, and those rumbling words were heard among some of Puich's foster brothers. So it was that some of his neighbouring kingdoms even began declaring loudly that the land's lack of fertility lay squarely at the gates of Arberth. A few brave souls whispered that the reasons lay in a far more intimate chamber in his household. Eventually, a delegation of druids sent for Puich and requested his presence at a meeting in the Plaselli Mountains. At the site of the water stones, where land, sea, and sky had always met. When the High Council called, it was wise to respond, and Puich gathered his true companions to him and set out for the ancient ring of blue stones in the north of Dyved. The wind whistled across the bare peaks of the mountains and under the marshy slopes where the ancient ring stood, half hidden in chill mists. Puich rode slowly up to the ring and could see that each of the stones had a druid standing in front of it, watching him intently. He saw many ancient longbeards there, druids whose many years of service were unquestioned. Standing in the centre, next to all of the druid leaders, stood Pendaran, his oldest friend and foster brother. Puich's true companions rode around the outside of the great ring, dismounted and waited quietly for events to unfold. Some of them looked darkly at Puich. He concluded that their ears had been working extremely well in the last few weeks, and he ought to watch these companions a little closer in the coming months.
Delwyn.
Aye, my lord.
Look you at our company and note with care those who are casting their dark gaze upon me, like fishers with barbed nets.
That I will, my lord. I didn't...
Hush, Delwyn, they approach.
He dismounted and walked forwards to meet the approaching druids. Pendaran smiled at him and he felt his heart lift. And then he saw the faces of the elder men and women, and his heart fell like a weighted fishing stone deep into his boots.
Step forward, Puich, Prince of Dyved.
So-called Prince of Annwn.
They have some advice for you, lad. Step forward.
Puich walked forward into the circle, and Delwyn stayed at the gateway. They all moved to the centre of the circle so that all of those present could hear what was said, and they all knew that only truth could be spoken at the centre of that ancient and powerful circle.
We have some fears that we wish to discuss with you as prince of this land.
We and those we represent.
While it is true that you are not as old as many men in this land.
And yet it is also true that warriors tend not to live as long as others. So, we're all concerned that you'll not be providing us with an heir.
Perhaps you are not capable of providing us with an heir.
You go too far.
I only meant that it is well known that those of Faerie are not known to be very fruitful when it comes to bearing children.
And yet you, who speak of years as though they are but blinks in the eyes of the gods, are making this judgment on my wife after such a short time? There's still plenty of time for my queen to bear a child.
And yet you know the law well, my lord. Your advisor, Pendaran, has explained to us the depth of your love for this fey woman. And we are mindful of the peaceful relations we've had with the fey in these 3 years past. And yet...
The valleys are becoming parched again, lord. The trees bear little fruit. As apparently, so do you.
Enough. My lord Puich is aware of his obligations under the law to his people and ever has been their protector. His honour is not in question here.
Calm yourself, young Pendaran. Just because you are to be given a sacred charge in future years does not mean you can address the High Council in that fashion. All that we are suggesting is that our lord takes another wife and gives the land its heir. What he does in his spare time, not our concern, eh?
You and your kingdom in the south may wish this situation to remain unchanged, my lord Puich. But those of us from the north will not allow that to happen.
I have no intention of putting aside the woman I love, nor laying with any other. However,
I do recognize the law and the wisdom of your words. I propose this concession to you all. Put off this decision for the space of a year and a day, and we shall meet here again on the last day of the solstice celebration. I will abide by whatever decision you all make at that time.
And so it was agreed. Pwych rode back to his wife with a heavy heart. Kerris's hooves seemed to thud dully into the dry mud, with an even heavier drumbeat than they had on the way to this sacred site. He arrived back at Arbeth well after night had fallen, and Rhiannon took him into her arms, seeming to sense and know his distress without any words passing between them. He held her close throughout the night, but he could not sleep. The moons continued to ride high into the sky, and winter bit hard through their furs that year. Crows echoed throaty voices through the rafters, and Pwych and Rhiannon spent many an evening huddled together for extra warmth and comfort. On one fine, crisp evening, just before the winter festival of lights and the lambing season, Rhiannon was in the king's chambers with him, and he sat up from under the coverlet to call for one of his pages to stoke up the fire and place fresh tinder on it. As he settled back down to watch the sparks spit into the air, he noticed that his wife's belly was slightly swollen. He glanced into her eyes eagerly, and she smiled back at him.
Is it possible? Am I?
Well, this is my third moon without the flux, my lord, and I have been sick most mornings. Let us pray to the gods that this is what we both so dearly hope for.
Pwych watched her in nervous anticipation over the next few months, as she grew heavy with child, knowing that fairy women often suffer much during pregnancy. He found himself taking more and more time on the practice field with his companions, as his wife developed a taste for strange food and suffered bad temper. He was ushered out of her chambers more and more often as the moons passed, and she required more care from the wise women of Arbeth. There were those who looked askance at the fairy queen. There were those who believed that no good can come of the mixing of the two races.
It ill becomes us for our lord to fall prey to fairy glamour.
When the sacred king is tainted, the land is tainted with him.
Aye, 'tis well known.
But what shall be done to save our lord?
What can we do to save our land?
We should pray to the ancient and terrible one in the deep waters to spirit the child away.
Hush now, there's someone here. Let us await our task.
Rhiannon's slight fey frame was not finding the pregnancy easy, and all of her lifeblood was flowing into the child. Eventually a worried Pwych consulted the druids and asked for an oracle. They told him that all would be well in the end, but that she needed him to be strong and to be there to grant her his strength. This was something that Pwych found to be easier than breathing when it came to his glorious wife. His was not to worry about the fevered whisperings and worries found at the bottom of mead cups or amongst washerwomen. His place was at his wife's side. He would swear frequently and often whilst in his cups that the longer the pregnancy went on, though she grew more pale and wan, she also seemed more vibrant with health. As the festival of Cullen Mai, the Feast of May, approached, the wise women kept him away outside her chambers, and he waited anxiously as they ferried fresh linen and strange-smelling infusions into her. Oh, the waiting seemed interminable. Then he heard it, a cry, and without any regard for propriety, he pushed past the old wise woman at the door and rushed to his wife on the bed. He first saw her looking up at him with a bedraggled, tired, but beaming face, and then he saw the bundle in her arms.
It's a boy, a beautiful boy.
Oh, praise the gods, my love. They've given us a great gift. Is he well? Is he...
He is perfect in every way, my lord.
Rhiannon knew well how important it was for a future heir of Dyved to bear no imperfection, that he be not blemished in the sight of the gods. Oh, she felt truly blessed in this moment, as she'd never been blessed before. She offered the bundle up to him, and he gazed down into the deep, dark eyes of the swaddled babe, seemingly gazing into a pool of infinite wisdom and love. He sat gently on the bed next to her, and she took the babe back, trying to get the boy to suckle. They both watched the ancient wisdom fade and the baby creep into their child. Quick watched as Rhiannon started to nod, to gently drift into sleep, and he signalled to the waiting women to take the baby and put him into his crib. He tenderly kissed her brow and watched the baby sleep for a while. He stood gently and quietly, signalling for the wet nurse, and then silently left the chamber so that both of his treasures could sleep. Rhiannon's six maids carefully watched him leave and briefly glanced at each other. One of them slipped over to watch the queen sleep and crept back again to her pallet. Speaking quietly to each other, they came to an agreement, and five of them stretched out to sleep, whilst the sixth took the first shift, watching the newborn babe. Sad it is to tell, but as the midnight hour approached, that good wife went to the pallets and laid herself down, forgetting for a crucial instant to wake one of the others to watch over the babe. And within a few scant breaths, all within the chamber were deeply, very deeply, asleep. As the first rays of the sun began to steal into the bedchamber, the women awoke. All of their instincts screamed in alarm as they realised that the baby should have awoken for a feed during the night, and they rushed over to the crib, fearing the worst. Nothing could have prepared them for what they saw, though. The crib was completely empty. The princeling had completely disappeared. They looked at each other in horror, surprise, deep, deep shame.
Oh, the boy is lost to us for sure. Why has he gone now? We did not think she would carry the bark on the poor Barbie to term.
And many a child is lost in the carrying. But for this, they'll put us to death or burn us alive for not watching over him, as we ought to have done. And in truth, that would not be punishment enough.
He was such a fair lad as well. Is there anything in the whole wide world that we can do?
Shush, no. Let me think. Yeah, that is. I have a good plan.
What could that possibly be?
Tell us quickly. Tell us before the mistress awakes.
There is a staghound bitch in the courtyard below, and she has whelped. Let us kill one of the pups and smear some of the blood all around the fey woman's face and hands. We could even leave some bones in the bed with her. When she awakens and all is discovered, we can accuse her of eating the child herself. The nobles of the court will be so horrified by our actions. We just have to stick together.
And so one of the most dastardly plans in history was agreed upon. Two of the women went down to capture and kill one of the whelps, whilst the others bit and struck each other to bring up bruises. With the aid of their eating tools, they constructed their crime scene, washed the blood from their hands, and sat down in a huddle around the crib to await Rhiannon's awakening. As the golden light of the May Day sun shone brightly into the room, Rhiannon awoke and immediately looked over towards the beautifully carved crib. She sat up, saying,
"Bring my son over to me, ladies."
"Lady, do not ask us to do what we cannot. Do not ask us about your son."
"What? What are you trying to say?"
"Lady, we have never seen any woman as violent as yourself, and we are covered with bruises and cuts from your blows."
"Try as we might, we could do nothing to protect ourselves or prevent you from doing the awful thing that you did."
"Awful thing that I did? Tell me now, I pray. What in all of the worlds are you talking about?"
Her eyes pierced the faces of the women who stood before her. She could see the bruises upon their faces, and she could see their eyes drift between her face and her hands. Her eyes followed their gaze, and she saw the little pieces of broken bones on top of the blood-smeared linen. She saw the dried blood on her own hands, and the horror began to rise up within her. She felt as if the terror was strangling her, and all of the air had been sucked out of her chamber.
Do not ask us for your son, my lady, we pray you.
Do we not see you devour the boy with our own eyes?
Oh, my poor ladies. I can see that you have suffered, but for the love of the Most High, tell no more lies about me. No more, I beg of you. The gods who see everything know that that is a falsehood. They know that I would never do such a thing. If you say this because you are afraid, then trust that my confession before the gods will protect you.
In faith, my lady, we will not bring hurt upon ourselves or anyone in the world.
Oh, you poor creatures. I promise you that you will come to no harm for telling the truth.
But no matter how hard she tried, whether her words were fair or pitying, hard or persuasive, threatening or pleading, no other answer would these six women give. It was not long before the tears, entreaties and cries awoke the household, and Pwych, the Prince of Annwn, went to his wife's bedchamber. As he did so, the news of the awful deed began to spread through the land like wildfire through sun-dried crops. And before the day had fully broken, all of the Welsh nobility had heard of this otherworldly horror. Pwych went to his wife to comfort her and inquire about the truth. Try as they might, neither could pierce the fog of confusion that surrounded them, and there was nothing either could do to stop the tears from flowing at the loss of their son. It was not many minutes, and certainly not long enough, before messengers began to knock at the chamber door and request that Pwych attend a meeting of nobles and druids in the great hall. He could only refuse for so long, though, as the requests began to turn into demands. Wearily and angrily, he made his way to his throne in the hall and faced all of the scared and angry faces before him. Many had ridden long and hard from other provinces, as well as other cantrevs, and all beseeched Pwych to abandon Rhiannon and send her far away for the evil deed that she had done. The elder druid from the circle once more stepped in front of Pwych.
My lord, once again you have no heir, and your wife has committed a deed so terrible we cannot bear to think on it.
My lords, peace be on you. I will listen to all of your complaints. But know this, I will not put my wife away from me, for I love her, and whatever crime she may or may not have committed, she has borne me a son. Now, our agreement was for a child to be born to the kingdom within a year, and so it has been. If she has indeed done wrong, then let her be punished for it, but I will not lose my wife.
He sat back into the ornate chair and listened to the nobles and the druids argue for a while. But he knew that it was inevitable that they would be forced to agree to his conditions. He knew the law as a prince should, and had abided with all of the terms that they had set him. Now he was just worried about Rhiannon. As for Rhiannon, she sent all of the women away and sat alone in her chambers, weeping quietly into her pillow furs. She could fight and argue with these women no more. Although she knew there was falsehood in their words, there was also something of glamour and magic in the air, and as a mortal, her perceptions were greatly limited. With all her half-remembered fae skills, she could not divine the truth or persuade it to reveal itself. Verily, if it be true, if these women had indeed taken her son from her, then their punishment would be far more severe than any laid upon herself. Eventually, she made a decision and sent for those fae she could reach and the chief druids of the land. They spoke together for many hours, and the more they spoke, the less sure she became of herself. Eventually, she decided that she should take their punishment upon herself, whatever it might be. The wise men debated long and decided that she should remain at Arbeth for a period of 7 long years. Each day she should arise and sit upon a horse mounting block outside the main gate into the town, by the stabling. To any that arrived at the gate who did not seem to know her tale, she was to tell the story of her crime. Further, she was to offer to carry any guests and strangers on her back, if they would permit her, into the castle. Mayhap many visitors were kind souls, or mayhap they were warned that to do so may not be the wisest of courses. But whatever the case, there were few who permitted her to carry them, as if she were a beast of burden, wearing her collar and a bridle of gold. Although humbled, her status was still recognised. At night time, with tears streaking down her face, tired and weary, she would find her way back to her place at Pwyll's side. And so it continued in this awful way for most of the year, with her pain becoming more and more unbearable.
In our next episode, we meet one of Pwyll's oldest allies, who strives to solve a mystery and meets an ancient horror instead.
My goodness, that was pretty intense. In fact, it was quite horrific. Goodness, how do we follow that? What's next?
Oh, you'll just have to wait and see. So, have we got any listener feedback before we listen to more from Dave's new album, Sabbath?
Yes, we have a question from Chris in South Australia, and it's a question that we're often asked, actually.
It is. So, yeah, let's have a listen to Chris's message.
Hey, how you going? My name's Chris, and I live in South Australia. But originally I'm from Cornwall in the United Kingdom. I was born there, so I'm Cornish. Now, I've been away from Cornwall for a good 8 years, and I really miss it. I love the countryside, I love the people, and I'm wanting to get something to link me back to home. So I'm thinking of getting a Cornish tattoo, maybe on my back, and I was just wondering if you guys can help me out by finding out traditional Cornish designs that I could get as a possible tattoo, if that's the Cornish cross, the Celtic cross, or the Cornish Celtic knot design, anything like that. So yeah, if you could email me images of the traditional designs, that would be fantastic. And you can put this out to your listeners too, to email me their ideas as well. Because I want to get this tattoo just to remind me of home, pretty much. So my email address is chrisontheradio@hotmail.com. That's chrisontheradio@hotmail.com. It's no spaces, all one word. Because I do a podcast as well, so I've got a radio email address. Anyway, I would love to hear from you guys, so please get in contact soon.
A big thank you to a fellow podcaster for your question, Chris. This is indeed something that we get asked a lot. So, have you found any resources that might help Chris out?
Well, yes. We couldn't find any really old, specifically Cornish designs, Chris. But there are quite a few images that have been turned into designs, such as St. Piran's Cross, and many variations of the Piskey. We'll link to a few in the show notes.
If you'd prefer something that's more like the Celtic knotwork that we imagine, it might be worth checking out the other books that we list in the show notes, and coming up with your own combinations or design. George Bain's book is probably the most famous.
But we'll have all the details in the show notes for you, Chris. And if anyone else has any super ideas, perhaps they'd like to send you an email at the email address you gave in your question.
Yes. Thank you very much, everyone. Now, we hunted for your podcast, Chris, and I think we found it. I thought it might be nice to let people know what you do. So I hope we found the right show.
Yes. Chris calls himself Savvy, and his podcast showcases all sorts of new music. Although we couldn't find a promo, here's the beginning of the super show featuring Lindsay Stirling, the amazing violinist. Have a listen.
This is a pod safe transmission.
Yo, bring that big bad bass to drop the bass.
Baseline pumping, crowd is jumping.
You're listening to Savvy.
Livewire Podcast Radio.
Baseline pumping, crowd is jumping, beats is pumping.
I saw him in person once
on Livewire Podcast Radio.
He's a big dude.
Best podcast in the world.
Yeah.
Livewire Podcast Radio.
Radio.
Lindsay Sterling, and you're listening to Savvy on Livewire Podcast Radio. Yeah, yeah, go Savvy, he's the man.
I want a set of pixie ears. Or are they elf ears? Not sure. Answers on a postcard, chris.theradio@hotmail.com.
Now, it would be most embarrassing if we played somebody else's promo, so hopefully we've got it right.
Yeah, it will be, yes. I hope that's the right one, Chris. If not, send us a promo, mate.
So, I think it's time to let Dave sing us out with the title track from his new album, Sabbat, don't you?
Oh, yes. This is an awesome song that seems to sum up so many things that were important to the ancient Celts. Celebrating the festivals as the year turns, the old gods, the fairies, and the bonding of families and communities.
And this one's going to be played again and again on our car stereo, I'm sure. Right, now get on with it and play the song. I can't wait any longer.
Sure, no problem. So, have a listen to Sabbat by Dave the Bard. From his powerful album of the same name.
The day is done, I turn my gaze towards the setting sun. I taste the incense in the air, I hear the sound of drums. The chill of the evening descends. All day long I've been working hard for the man. But now's the time to ditch this skin and be who I am. Some people just don't understand. You can keep your devil, I'll dance with Pan. For I will fly free on the wings of ecstasy, and I will dance free to the music of fairy. Ear mock, Beltane, Lunar Star and Samhain, equinox and solstice on hilltops in forest tonight. To the Sabbath I will ride. I will dance with the fairy queen beneath the silver moon. I will taste the honey mead and chant the witch's rune. My heart with the pulse of the land. Witness now the union of chalice and of blade. Of life and death and life again, the union is made. By power of land and of sea. By power of will, so mote it be. I will fly free on the wings of ecstasy, and I will dance free to the music of fairy. Imog, Beltane, Lunar Star and Samhain, equinox and solstice on hilltops in forest. To the Sabbath I will ride. The night is done, the sun will rise upon a brand new day. And I, along with millions, go out to earn our pay. They see just what they want to see. But I've danced with the fairy queen, shared the meat of the sun. I've worn the oaken crown before the horned one. And I'll know it's time to return when I see those pagan fires burn. For I will fly free on the wings of ecstasy. And I will dance free to the music of fairy. Imhoc, Beltane, Lunasar and Samhain, equinox and solstice on hilltops in forests tonight. To the Sabbath I will ride.
And that was Dave the Bard with his title track from his fabulous new album, Sabbat. That's going to be playing in my head for weeks. And it's available today. Awesome. Thank you for singing us out, Dave. And I think that brings us to the end of the show.
Almost. Apart from mentioning that the next two shows will be finishing off the story of Puich and Rhiannon. And somewhere in there we've got a nice couple of special shows planned. Lots to come.
Super.
And so, I think that really does bring us to the end of the show.
It does. And we wish you many blessings and say...
Húvar!
You've been listening to the Celtic Myth Pod Show, available from CelticMythPodShow.com.
We hope you've enjoyed the show and will stay tuned for the next episode. You can send us an email or some voice feedback to Gary and Ruth at CelticMythPodShow.com. We'd like to say a special thank you to Coulan's Hounds, who provided us with the theme music for our show. You can find them at www.sfhounds.com. We'd also like to say a massive thank you to Amruce, Kira, Celia, Dave the Bar, The Dolman, Keltoria, Kevin Skinner, Phil Thornton, SJ Tucker, and Spiral Dance. All of these wonderful friends have given us unrestricted access to their music. More details about each of them can be found in the special Friends of the Show page on our website. You'll find links to all of these wonderful artists in the show notes at shownotes.celticmythpodshow.com.